views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you, when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings, turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was building your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today is Thursday. It is November the 5th, 2015. Glad to be back on these airwaves. Still struggling to get back into the flow of things. As y'all know, I took a week off. I was trying not to do anything to try to recharge my batteries, and I'm already behind already. But been getting some things done. If you haven't heard about or checked out the new website that the Black Talk Media Project has launched called ProxyRacism.com, please do so. Please go on over to the website, ProxyRacism.com. You can subscribe by email, and you can get updates on all the posts. Doing some, it's still in the development stages, but it is functional. Even added a new poll today that I hope people will participate in that poll as I try to gather information about people's, level of knowledge on proxy racism and how they may be willingly or unwittingly participating in the oppression of the oppressed people of the United States or that live here in the United States. And I'm talking primarily about black people, but they are by no means the only people who are being oppressed in this country. All right, so we, although proxy racism .com will focus mainly on non-white people, but we'll throw up some Hispanics, some or Latinos, however they classify themselves, or some Asians, or whoever it is that is aiding white supremacists through their words, deeds, and actions, supporting a system of white supremacy. Because I just have this sneaky suspicion that if enough of us decide that we're going to stand on principle and we're not going to go along with racists and oppressing other people or mistreating people in any form or fashion, that we actually could reverse this situation. And even if we can't reverse it 100%, and, you know, it may take the bullet to do that. But if we decide to not participate, and we get enough of us not to participate, not to give aid and comfort to the enemy, if enough of us, then, you know, we could substantially lessen the impact of the system of racism and white supremacy on the lives of everyone in this country. So that is what ProxyRacism.com is all about. It's about informing people, number one, about proxy racism, and then providing them with real world examples. It is not to make fun of anyone. It's not to bring harm to anyone. But I believe that we are all responsible for our actions. And if we're going to do something, and we're going to do something publicly, and we're going to put it out there, then, you know, you make yourself a candidate to have your actions scrutinized. Now, I've been brought up to not judge people, but judge their actions. But there's some truth to that. There's a little truth for that. But people are made up of their actions. So, you know, we have to use logic. We have to use common sense. Okay. It's not about judging people. It's about judging their actions. And if their actions determine that they're not good people, then I care less about how they feel. If they're engaged in anything that's harming other people, then certainly at the top of my list should not be worried about their comfort. All right. So, yeah, please check out proxyracism.com. Got some other plans for that website coming up in the future. But the poll is up. Take the poll. And the poll is just simply asking the question, do you believe that black people, non-white people, should stop assisting white supremacists? I'm paraphrasing the question. It's not a very complicated question, and just trying to gather people's thoughts on that. All right. Today's program, I should be on no more than an hour. If I need to take more than an hour to share things or information and news stories with you today, then I'll do that. But I'm trying to keep it to an hour because I got so much on me. I just had a college student, the speaker, that reach out to me for an internship, and I'm still trying to figure out their skill level and whether or not we can accommodate them with an internship so that it will also help them with their degree that they're finishing up, because this person actually had wrote a paper on Black Talk Radio Network and even focused on this program it was like a media communications class or something like that, and they were talking about the use of propaganda, and he made this program and myself the subject of his paper, and understanding how media is used to manipulate the minds of the masses and whatnot. So I am open to college students that want extra credit and things of that nature to help meet their requirements, scholastic requirements. I have had people in the past do some things through Black Talk Media Project so that they can meet the criteria of their community service. They had gotten in trouble and the court said, you got to do this community service. And they reached out to us and they were able to fulfill their community service by helping us to produce some propaganda and then distribute that propaganda. But unfortunately, they didn't, after their community service was up, you know, they went about their way. So we do have that, the ability to do that as a registered state nonprofit, the Black Talk Media Project. So let me quit rambling on. Welcome in to those who were just listening to one of our media partners' programs. That was Time for Awakening. They had a guest on, Chike Kale. I probably messed up that name. But you can check out their website and get their podcast. They're actually working on building a new website, but you can find their archives at timeforawakening.blogspot.com. It may be timeforawakeningradio.blogspot.com. They also have archives on blacktalkradionetwork.com, but they may not be as up to date as the other websites. So you can go check that out if you want to continue to listen to that podcast. But I hope that you will stick around for this broadcast. And then coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, Brother Dave will be broadcasting live, Tando Radio Show. They'll be talking about some important things. Got a couple of guests. One of them is a brother from 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. And the other is Miss Sanders from the On Us. I think it's onus.org. She was just a guest here on Black Talk Radio News about a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. She is putting out a lot of important information and addressing the issue of police terrorism in this country. So please, if you get an opportunity, I think you should tune in at 6 o'clock p.m. to Tando Radio Show and hear what those two guests have to say. Now, because I am running a little bit behind, I did not post a program description. I just shared the broadcast page, sent that out. But most regular listeners know that this program airs at 4 o'clock. I will get that posted later as I try to catch up on posting the podcast and stuff from the programs that was on air last night. So the stories will be linked up for you once I'm able to get those posted after the conclusion of this after this live stream. All right. So what's on tap today? Well, the main story I'm going to say to last, but the main story that I want to discuss with you today is about film director Quentin Tarantino linking white supremacy to police terrorism. If you haven't heard, he participated in the recent nationwide protests against police brutality and terrorism. He was in New York City up there with Cornel West and some other people and all the activists who we don't know all their names, but they're working hard behind the scenes to assist people who need the most help. But he was a part of that. And so I want to talk about that. There are several angles that we can look at that from. I call it a case of reverse racial showcasing. Racial showcasing is a term that Neely Fuller Jr. came up with. He's the author of the Compensatory Code book. He came up with racial showcasing as a term to describe high profile black people like a Don Lemon, who we'll be talking about here shortly in another story. But Don Lemon, whether they're in different areas of people activity, the nine areas of people activity, and you have people who act, who are active in those areas, and the system of white supremacy will showcase them. The reason that they showcase them is varied. There are various reasons, but the number one reason is to promote the sense that everybody has equal opportunity in this country, and all you need do is work hard and pull yourself up by your bootstraps, go get an education from White Supremacy University, and you know, go to work for white people, and you can be showcased too, you know. So if you can't get $1 million in your pocket or bank account or whatnot, if you're not having your daily needs met, like in terms of food, housing, and clothing, then you must be doing something wrong. Because look at these other people that look just like you, and they doing it up big, man. They got a plate full of butter biscuits and whatnot. So it must be something you doing wrong. So anyway, I have expanded the term, as Mr. Neely Fuller encourages people to do, but I have expanded upon that term to include the term reverse racial showcasing. And what reverse racial showcasing is the exact thing, same as racial showcasing. It is when the victims showcase a white person or any other person who is engaged in a activity that lends to the cause of justice. Now, in their individual lives, they may not be doing everything correct and whatnot, and they may have in the past engaged in racism and white supremacy. But everybody has things in their background that they're not proud of, and including yours truly and whatnot. And like Malcolm X said, man, you know, don't be so quick to judge people because they don't know what you know, or they come into consciousness later than you. But it ain't all about Tarantino or trying to say he's an anti-racist or anything like that. It's about showcasing his particular statements that he made in support of the anti-police brutality demonstrations that he was asked to participate in, and he did. Now they are looking at punishing him for calling murderers, and calling the victims the murdered victims. So they all up in arms about that. I've talked about it a little bit, but I ain't really go into depth about it. And so there, the police unions across the nation, of course, is trying to tell people to boycott his movie. Even his own, what would we call that person? One of the people, the executive producer or somebody who helps put together films and distribute them and all of that. Harvey Weinstein is the guy who's associated with Tarantino's, a lot of his films and whatnot. And he's even mad at Tarantino because, see, he don't care nothing about all these people being murdered by police. He said that all he care about is everybody buying tickets and him making money off the movies while ignoring, you know, the suffering of some of the people that actually put money into his pocket and whatnot. So he came down on Tarantino, and then Tarantino's father even came after him. And that is really interesting because his father is a deadbeat dad, and like we, and again, this goes back to some conversations had just the day before yesterday in my interview with Dr. Francis Cress Welsing about this wrong information about, you know, black men aren't being fathers or missing from the homes just because a lot of black women is listed as single in government databases. That don't mean that they alone or they're doing things by themselves. All right. It don't mean that. And that study shows that, you know, white men, white males are more likely than not to abandon their children, to not be in their children's lives. They don't raise their children for whatever reason. When they're done with the mother, they are done. They don't care if she produced a baby or not. Hey, I'm done with this woman, and I'm just going to get missing. All right. Tarantino's dead. Tarantino is what? In his 40s, maybe 50s or whatnot. He said he ain't never, ever met his father. And now his father, once Tarantino got famous, oh, then his father became an actor to try to make money off of the Tarantino name because of off the coattails of his son, you know, using his son. Yeah, his son got the name from him, but you abandoned that man, and now you coming out criticizing him and even lying on him because he told the truth and shame the devil. So I mean, there are so many angles, you know, in these various news stories and things that happen that, you know, we could just dig all into it and go off into many different areas. And so, you know, things aren't as simple as the mainstream media will have you to believe. And of course, there is a lot of deception being practiced. Now, which brings me to deception, or the question of deception in the mainstream media. It also has an element of proxy racism. It also has an element of black on black colorism crimes and whatnot. But black activist Sean King had his Twitter account suspended after he posted an exchange between himself and a CNN producer who was trying to get him to come on the program and be a guest, Don Lemon. And CNN, if you didn't know, it is a white supremacist propaganda channel. I don't care how many non-white people they showcase on there, how many proxy racist tools they are utilizing. That's a white supremacist propaganda channel. Now, Don King told the woman, "I'm not coming on his show because of some things that Don King engaged in relation to my story." Now, y'all may not remember, but Sean King was attacked for having a white parent. This came on the heels of the Rachel Dolezal story, the white woman who was pretending to be black and was even leading a chapter of the NAACP in Seattle, or I know it was in Washington in that part of the country. But that story, and white people so slick with it, man. So they saw that and they was like, well, damn, look at Sean King. He's one of these Black Lives Matter protesters, and he's a writer, and he gets a lot of attention, you know, because of the activism that he engaged in. How can we tear him down? Look, he's pretty light-skinned, so it's probable that he probably is another Rachel Dolezal, a white person pretending to be black. And then so it came out that he does have a white parent, but guess what? He got a black parent. He had, unfortunately, his black father, in similar circumstances as Quentin Tarantino. Now, I think Sean King may eventually have met his father or whatnot, but his father wasn't a big part of his life. So, but anyway, then we have black people on the internet still going after Sean King and calling him a fraud and all this and that. And so, I'm like saying, you know, this time out for that nonsense. And it ain't got nothing to do with the one drop rule or anything like that. But he has a black parent. He is treated as if he is black by white supremacists. As he, you know, got terrorized by white terrorists when he was a high school student and got into fights and stuff like that, because them white people knew he was black. But the white supremacists, the refined white supremacists of mainstream corporate media, who have been on a propaganda campaign against Black Lives Matter, they decided to target him. And now, unfortunately, you know, in a lot of instances, their campaign against Sean King has been successful, as I'm still seeing black people questioning his black card, so to speak. And I'm like, I want to know, what does it take to be black? What does it take? Because it's not a nationality, as I heard Brother Davis on Tando Radio Show, you know, talk about yesterday. It ain't like, you know, there is a nation within this nation. I know that there is a long standing dream for black people to create an autonomous black nation. And under these conditions of terrorism, I can see why. And that is logical. That is logical. But the fact remains, though, is that there is no nation called black. There is no black nation that you have, you know, citizenship to or anything like that. But black is this is how I define it. It's a culture. It's not really a racial classification, although that has something to do with it. But it's a culture. It is a unique culture that was created by the descendants of enslaved black people, as well as free black people. Because every black person in this country ain't here as a result of the transatlantic slave trade. But after post 1865 slavery, because slavery was never abolished, and more of those enslaved Africans got some freedom, and of course, who was they gonna live around and try to be around? The free black communities that was already established here. So we built, you know, we came together, and you know, we created this unique culture that, you know, spurned many different cultural things, like, you know, jazz music, rock and roll, R&B, rhythm and blues. What else? The blues. And then also, you know, we've been prominent in establishing fashion trends and things. Cause see, so I'm saying, though, to me, the only thing that I'm looking for, if you are a black person, to determine whether or not you're a black person, is if you got a black parent, if you're melanated to a certain extent, although there are some black people that you can't tell. You just can't tell from looking at them. You know, people say J. Edgar Hoover was a black person, passing off as white. So we just can't go off of the level of melanation. But that we can include that in the criteria, all right? But also, more importantly, is their speech, thoughts, and actions, all right? And certainly, Sean King has spoken out on behalf of the issues affecting black people. He says he's black. He has a black person. He says he identifies with black culture, all right? He lives around black people now. And he's doing more than most people that we see. You know, everybody ain't doing things to be seen, but of the people who are showcased, he's doing more and doing a better job than other people who we recognize as being black. So to me, he don't get disqualified simply because he got a white parent. And, you know, y'all playing right into the people who subscribe to that and attacking this man based on his skin tones and calling him a fraud and all this and that. You playing right into the hands of the enemy, which was to do what? Cause more division and strife and squabbling and all that kind of garbage in the black community. So, you know, you just need to reexamine your definition of who's black and who ain't black. Cause the last time, from my study of history, most black people in this country do not have pure African bloodlines, that you are mixed just like I'm mixed with different ethnicities and nationalities and stuff like that. But I'm black. I identify as black. I advocate on behalf of black people. I care about issues that is affecting black people the most. And I see similar attitudes and things within Sean King. So, I feel his pain when people go after him like that. And who are you to be? Who made you the king of black people that, you know, you get to say who is and who ain't black based on their skin color, man? Come on. We got to be more mature in our thinking than that. Let me see what else. Now, the first story that I'm going to talk about, there's three things I want to talk about. But the first story that I'm going to talk about, one of our longtime listeners and financial supporters or donor asked me to cover the issue of black men damaging their long-term health by playing in the NFL. This question has arisen after the death of her, and these are her words, her lover and her friend, Frederick A. McNeil, who was a linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings. He died 2 days ago after a battle with dementia and ALS. And this is something that former NFL players, particularly those who played linebacker or running back or cornerback, you know, the people who are doing the most hitting people and whatnot, and that's causing brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries and whatnot. And unfortunately, Mr. McNeil lost his life as a result of those health issues brought about by his activity, his profession when he was playing in the NFL. So first thing I want to do is send my condolences, offer my condolences to you in your time of grief. It's never easy when we lose someone who plays such a prominent role in our life and brings us happiness and some measure of peace and joy behind these enemy lines. So, I hope that you are taking care of your emotional state and not allowing yourself to get too far down or whatnot. But just know that my thoughts are with you, and I'm sure the thoughts and the prayers and the well wishes and condolences are also in the hearts of our Black Talk Radio Network family. But I do want to talk about, I want to answer the question about should our men since it's only men playing in the NFL or whatnot, but should we damage our long-term health by playing football or any other sport where we're entertaining white people and whatnot? So yeah, I want to address that because I do have some thoughts on it. So anyway, let me go ahead and take a station identification break. Looks like I'm gonna be going over an hour, but that's okay. I will get caught up on my work if I had to stay up another 30 hours straight. But anyway, we're going to take a station identification break. I need a glass of water. That'll give me time to do that. And you can also take some time if you need to take care of something. So y'all tune in. Y'all stay tuned as we will be back on the other side. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is sick on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. Come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Let me give out the telephone numbers in case anybody wants to ask a question or has a comment. And, you know, just we're supposed to be here to help each other. Doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to be in agreement with everyone, but you might have a piece of the puzzle that somebody else is looking for, you know, and that's what we're all supposed to be trying to solve this problem. And so it ain't about agreement. It ain't about disagreement. It's about having discussions. It's about asking questions. It's about trying to solve the problem. So the telephone number, 704-951-5030. 704-951-5030 is the studio line. The other way that you can participate, or you can just listen if you choose to, is to call the conference line. That telephone number is 641. Let me pull it up because I got a lot on my mind. I'm kind of still tired. 641-715-3660, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND, 549-032-POUND. At any time you would like to signal me, just hit star 6 and 1. *6-1. You can also use that flash phone, because we do have listeners from all over the planet. People from China was tuning in the other day. Even, you know, I see them people from Saudi Arabia that's over there doing them foul things, that's enslaving black people and Africans from Africa and Indians from India. And, you know, I spent some time there. I know what's going on. All right. And, but yeah, I don't know if it was the king or a prince or just a regular person, but y'all doing some foul things over there. But if you would like to talk about it, you can call in using the web-based flash phone, which allow you to call from anywhere in the world if you got a pair of headsets and obviously an internet connection. So, again, condolences to the listener and donor. That is my business line. Let me close my email. Somebody's trying to contact me, they can leave a voicemail. Let me see. Again, condolences to the listener and supporter of Black Talk Media Project on the loss of someone who was very important to your life. I do have the information. There's an article from CNN that was published back in 2010 in the health section, where Fred McNeil is discussed, and you know, the issue of concussions that we have heard a lot about in over the past couple of years. I'm reminded of Junior Seau, the longtime linebacker for the San Diego Chargers, who killed himself, and because of all the issues he was having from his days in the NFL, from the trauma of repeatedly, you know, your brain taking the impact, and you're doing that for a living, you know. So he shot himself in his chest so that he wouldn't damage his brain, so the brain could be studied. So we're finding out a lot more about the health impact of people playing football. And it's not just football. I saw a story of this soccer player. And, you know, if you got children that play soccer, both of my oldest girls, they, you know, very athletic, played a lot of sports, and they played soccer and whatnot. But I saw a story about a person who got traumatic brain injury from bouncing a soccer ball on his head all the time. You know, you see them, you know, you can use your head. They call it a header when you, you know, hit the ball with your head, because you're not supposed to touch it with your hands and stuff like that. But you can use other parts of your body, you know, you just can't grab the ball. But I guess this guy all his life, or since he was a little kid, would always be out there trying to, you know, bounce this ball on his head for as long as possible. And over the years, just that little small impact from a soccer ball, this person is now pretty much, I guess, what will be, he, let me just put it this way, he has some serious disabilities. He may have even killed himself, but he's like an adult now. But he is, you know, was wheelchair bound and, you know, just suffering. So it is a valid question to be asking, you know, should we be allowing our children, or we who are, let's say, college students now, or even high school students, or even NFL players, professional athletes, is it worth those millions of dollars, or the possibility of making millions of dollars, by putting yourself or your long-term health at risk? Now, I will say this about people like Mr. McNeil and Junior Seau and all the other NFL players who who are suffering or lost their lives as a result of that physical activity of that creates traumatic brain injuries. They did not have all the information. And there is a lawsuit, and there has been allegations that the National Football League had information about it. And indeed, these owners and the NFL itself, over the years, they have treated those men just as, you know, expendable bodies, you know, not really caring about the long-term impact on their health from playing this game, because this is a $1 billion a year industry and they're well compensated. But guess what? You don't have the right to withhold that information, and you know, or you had some clue that this could lead to long-term effects on them people. There's no way in the hell you're going to convince me that you even care about them as human beings. I don't care how much money you paid them. But my point is that people like Mr. McNeil did not have all the information to make an informed decision. So now we do have enough information, and we know that this could lead to long-term health implications. And I know a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I know among the people that I listen to, whether it's on the radio or I read their articles or their social media posts and stuff, they say that, you know, that black men shouldn't be in the NFL, and that, and comparing them to being slaves, which I feel like is going way too far when we have people actually in slavery today, because slavery was never abolished, who are not being paid millions of dollars to play some game or being compensated, you know, for their labor and whatnot. So, you know, we're going to diverge on that difference of opinion. I do not compare professional sports to slavery. All right. I don't compare entertainment or actors and them working, because guess what? Most black people in the United States is working in some capacity in every people activity that there is for white people. And white people are signing their checks and you know, giving them the health care if they got health care and all of that. So we all, you know, I mean, again, not all of us, but to some certain extent, I would feel safe to say that 95% of black people in this country work for white people or for corporations that are owned by white people. So you in the same boat. They ain't in no different situation or circumstance than what you're in. Okay, you just ain't getting paid as much money as they getting paid. So to call them slaves or to say that they enslaved, no. Slaves don't, the slaves I know of today, some of them might get paid 5 cents an hour to work on a turkey farm or something like that, like my little brother was forced to do all decades ago. You know, so no, I'm not going to compare what was done to my brother to somebody being paid millions of dollars to put a ball through a hoop. Not going to make that comparison. So, but in case you haven't been paying attention, there has been professional athletes, primarily the NFL. I'm thinking about a couple of players, at least one player I know of that played for the San Francisco 49ers. It might have been Patrick Willis, well-known linebacker, making a lot of money and was considered, you know, one of the best in the game. He walked away. He walked away and said that I'm concerned about my long-term health. So I'm going to take these millions of dollars that you already gave me, and I'm going to retire after I played, what, about 4 or 5 years or whatnot, because, you know, I don't want what has happened to some of these other people to happen to me. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's an individual choice. And, you know, as in every individual choice, you will hope that those people have all the information so that they're making an informed choice, all right, in terms of what they're going to do in terms of employment. And I don't see anything wrong with people playing professional sports and making millions of dollars that they otherwise could not make, all right? But this is what I hope that they're doing. I hope that what they're doing is using their showcase status to bring awareness about many of the issues of oppression that are facing black people primarily, non-white people in general, and white people to a lesser extent if they're poor and whatnot. So I hope that they are using their wealth to empower other people. You know, and a lot of us, we don't realize just how much money or help is being given to people who otherwise would not get any help. If it was not for some of these professional athletes giving back to the communities in which they play. All right. Whether that is, helping to stock a food pantry and showing up and whatnot, passing out food and to the people that need it. Whether or not it is, giving money to the local school system so that the kids can get computers or audio visual, technologies and other resources that the state ain't providing for them. This activity isn't showcased as much as it should be, because then they might worry about, these people setting a bad example for other people. People helping people who need help the most. So that's maybe that why they don't get as much attention for the good things that they do. I'm thinking about what's the singer named Beyonce. And, a lot of people don't know that an article was published by, I think it was the Rolling Stone or Rolling Out Media. And they published a story about Beyonce through her church that she grew up in and she still has, relationship with, spending millions of dollars to provide housing for homeless people in Houston, Texas. We can look at Muhammad Ali, the example that he set in not allowing himself to become a proxy tool of racism and being drafted into the Vietnam War to go kill other non-white people. And, he wasn't afraid to speak his mind, and he told them, ain't no Vietnamese ever called me no nigger. When I want justice, it's you who is my opposer. When I want freedom, it's you who is my post. So we have examples of professional athletes using their millions of dollars or using their showcase position to practice justice. So, yes, we should be concerned about the long-term health implications of anything that we are engaged in. But a lot of times it's not even physical things that are harming us, but it could be mentally as well, or spiritual damage that is being done to us because we are proxy tools of racism, and we know what we're doing is wrong, and we shouldn't be helping to put these people in the modern day slavery. But them damn butter biscuits is just so good and whatnot, and I want to give my children butter biscuits and whatnot. So I feel bad about it, but what else can I do but serve the master and harm other black people? I would hope that those people are feeling some kind of way about their activity. I hope that they haven't done it for so long that they have become callous to other human beings, including those who look it just like them, could be their sons and daughters. We hope that it's causing them psychological issues, because that means then that they ain't totally out of touch with their humanity. They still have some sliver of humanity, and that's why they got a conscience, and that's why they're suffering. But if you got a conscience for what you're doing and whatnot, you need to stop doing it, and you need to think about your long-term psychological health. That's how you have people that's rich as hell, but they ain't happy because they guilty about how they made their riches. So I know I tend to talk a lot, but I don't have a problem with people making that choice, as long as it's an informed choice. We all take risks. I knew, for example, when I joined the military at 20 years old just to get some college money, because I ain't want to go into debt with college you know, debt and all this and that, like my sister did, or, and I don't come from a wealthy, wealthy family. I mean, you know, I wouldn't even call my family wealthy. I mean, yeah, we do have some land and stuff like that, but guess what? We struggle day to day to put food on the table and to keep the lights on and to put clothes on our children's back, just like everybody else. All right. So, but what we're not doing is raising or providing for our families on the backs of other people by harming other people. So, you know, just make an informed choice about it. And I'm glad to see that some of these young men are, they do get it. And they have this information now. And they was like, guess what? Shoot, if I stay in here 4 years and whatnot, I have what, by the end of it, I have $60 million. Shit, if I manage my money correctly and invest in some black self-respect by creating a black business to employ other black people, I won't need for anything else for the rest of my life, you know? So, yeah, you know, I'm glad those young men are doing that and setting that example. Get it while you can and get out before you cause long-term damage to yourself. But, I mean, I struggle daily with, you know, the fact that I help white supremacists oppress non-white people during my service in the war. I ain't going to say I struggle with it, but it is on my mind, and I talk about it so that I can put it in other people's mind. I didn't have all the information about racism and white supremacy or the element of it that I call proxy racism. I didn't have all the information at that time, so I joined the military. But I knew I could be killed at any time. But shit, that, what do you think you're going in the military? What do you think the military does? But wage war. So I knew it was, I was going in and I was going to get out. That's what many of us who have with it. We going in for 4 years. We going to get that GI Bill. We going to get those VA benefits and we getting the hell out. So maybe that's what we'll start seeing many of these young men who are in, you know, such a hazardous job as banging your head up against other people's heads, you know, in the NFL. So, yeah, that's all I got to say about that. All right. I hope that I was helpful in explaining my views on that. All right. So the next story that I want to jump to before we come to the top of the hour and I take another break, I want to talk about Sean King, who I was, you know, just talking about earlier. Let me open up the HuffingtonPost.com article again. Once I get the podcast posted after today's program, it will be linked up for you. The title is Sean King Has Twitter Account Suspended After CNN Email Exchange. Let me see. It's not a very long article, but I'm not going to read it all. It says, when CNN editorial, oh, give me just a second. This was written by Gabriel Arana. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce the name when a male is using it, because my youngest daughter's name is Gabrielle, and it's spelt the same way. So I think it's Gabriel Arana. But when he wrote that, when CNN editorial producer Andrea Lewis reached out to the New York Daily News writer Sean King on Wednesday, asking him to appear on the network, King was shocked she had the audacity to contact him. King is also a leading voice in the Black Lives Matter movement. In August, he became the focal point of a national conversation about race when conservative website, and these straight up are, they ain't just conservative, these are white supremacists. The website Breitbart, which was started and founded by Andrew Breitbart, may he be eaten by worms and tortured in the afterlife. But it's more than just a conservative website. But they published a report questioning his racial identity because, yeah, you know, Rachel Dolezal, everybody talking about this white woman who strongly identifies as a black person but took the incorrect step of trying to pass herself off as a black person, even though she has white parents. I ain't got a problem with white people who identify with black culture and whatnot. It is what it is. If they admire your culture so much that they want to immerse themselves in it, hell, why should I have a problem with that? But I do got a problem with you telling people that you black and you got two white parents. I got a problem with that because that's deception. That is deception. That is dishonesty. And so it is incorrect behavior. But in his case, Sean King never did anything like that. And he does have a black parent. CNN's Don Lemon ran with the story. Here come the proxy racist too, to jump on it. Because he know lots of white people would love to pile on his brother. And King felt the network handled it poorly. Don Lemon talked about it many times on air and really butchered it, King told the Huffington Post. Frankly, I was really shocked at the invitation because in my mind and in my heart, in August, the way he handled my story was so egregious. So when Lewis contacted him, King shot back that he would never again appear on the CNN network. He then posted a screenshot of their email exchange on Twitter, a version of that screenshot with contact information redacted appears below. So without a whole bunch of more reading, you can read the rest of the article on the Huffington Post. You can look up the author, Gabriel Arana. The title was Sean King has Twitter account suspended after CNN exchange. It's funny. This story, the timing of this story is funny because over the past 2 days, I've been making social media posts about black people showing the utmost black self-respect by not running to be guests on the platforms of white supremacists. Think I was talking about Bill Maher, however you pronounce that racist white man's name. But he has a HBO show and he have showcased black people on his show. They have like a little round table. But if you pay attention to what he actually says in the positions that he takes, he's a white supremacist. He's just a little bit better at practicing refined white supremacy, and he just not so crude with it like, you know, a lot of white people where I live, you know, where they wearing a Confederate flag on their shirt and flying them off the back of their trucks and, you know, just engaging in a lot of trashy behavior and whatnot. See, Maurer is more refined than that. And so I was talking about it, and I've talked about it over the years. Black people, stop going on Bill O'Reilly to debate Bill O'Reilly, because number one, he don't care about what you have to say because he's going to interrupt you at every turn. That's a tactic to keep you from stringing thoughts and words together that might make some sense to some people watching, which is majority. I think Fox News has like a 4% viewership among black people, so the vast majority of people watching Fox News are white. And so you ain't going on Fox News to get a message to the masses of black people because they ain't watching Fox News. And in fact, most from some of the studies that have come out on news media, most people, black or white, are getting at least half of them get their news from social media like Facebook, Twitter, and alternative websites. So you ain't reaching the masses of black people on Fox News or any other white supremacist platform. But why would you go on there and help white supremacists? Now, you're not a willing to, but you are unwittingly aiding a white supremacist platform by allowing yourself to be showcased on that network. Now, again, I know some people that's been on there, and I've had this conversation with them behind closed doors. And there ain't no sense of me calling out their name because it's not to put them on the spot. I understand their thinking. They weren't doing it to harm black people. They were doing it to defend black people. But again, black people don't watch that show. All right. They don't watch that and whatnot. And the man is just going to simply interrupt you, which is disrespectful, and just be disrespectful, you know, to you. Their agenda is not to hear what you have to say. Their agenda is to make you look like the angry black person. The stereotype. Even though black people got plenty to be angry about, so you can call me an angry black person all you want to. Shit, I am an angry black man. And if you not, then something wrong with you. So, then, you know, they will showcase people like Jesse Lee Peterson and whatnot, and they'll come on, what's the sheriff, Milwaukee sheriff, what's his name, David Clark Jr., who has a white parent. He's black, but he has a white parent, and they bring him on because he hates his black self. He hates black people. He hates Black Lives Matter. So they don't interrupt those people when they come on. They let them spew all the anti-black rhetoric that they want to. All right. But you come on, they are interrupting you. They are trying to disrupt your thought patterns so that you can't put together a coherent sentence structure. Stay off of there. Don't even go on there. Now, his reasoning is different from mine, but he's coming to the same conclusion. CNN personally disrespected me. Don Lemon personally disrespected me, butchered my story, my personal story, tried to make me look like I was committing some kind of fraud like Rachel Dolezal, when I actually do have a black parent, when I actually was attacked by white supremacists and got a broken jaw and all this and that because they know I was black. And I stood up for myself and black people. That even though I'm writing about black victims of the system of racism and white supremacy, and I'm blasting on white supremacists and their proxy racist tools called cops and or judges or whatever, and I'm talking about a system of injustice, and I'm talking about all of this because I care about all of this. And whatnot, you know. So yeah, they want to try to throw salt on him and say, try to suggest to other black people that he ain't black. He's another Rachel Dolezal. Of course, CNN don't want white. Let me put it this way: white supremacists don't want black people with access to mainstream media like a New York Daily News that he write in writing about the things that they writing about. They trying to discredit him, the things that he writes about, the issues that he speaks out about, and in a broader sense, trying to discredit Black Lives Matter. That's why they, you know, got to make the association and whatnot. So Don Lemon invite, or his producer invited him. I'm sure Don probably, you know, said, yeah, I'm interested in bringing him on to talk about whatever it is that they was in contacting him to talk about. And Sean King said, no, CNN disrespected me. CNN disrespected my family. CNN brought a whole bunch of strife and conflict into the black community with now other black people questioning if I'm black or not. So, no, I'm not going on there ever again. So his reasoning is different, but he is practicing black self-respect by saying no. Shit, you last month, back in August, you was just on there talking all kind of garbage about me and telling lies and this and that and misrepresenting my family situation and trying to bring all this hatred from black and white people against me. No, I'm not going to help you by, you know, being a guest on your program so you can have content to entertain other white people and proxy racist tools and confuse people and whatnot. I'm not going to do it. I just want to say to Sean King, thank you for standing up and being a real black man. All right. Thank you for showing self-respect. Thank you for standing on principle. Our reasonings for not appearing on mainstream media, and yes, I have been invited on different networks in the past. They don't invite me no more, but I did not go on those networks. I didn't do it. Al Jazeera reached out to me to do an interview, but I know how Al Jazeera is viewed in this country. They view, you know, they're viewed as a terrorist network and whatnot. But I also know, you know, Al Jazeera's place on the corporate media plantation. I just wasn't interested in doing it. And matter of fact, you know, sometimes I don't even think I should be allowing people to even know what I look like, because I don't want to bring any harm to my family or anything like that, because people know what I look like. But, you know, since I am running a media platform, I am a social political analyst, commentator, and writer. I felt like, you know, if I try to use a pseudonym or whatnot, the people ain't going to take me credible, because guess what? Down the road, they going to dig into my background and say, oh, that ain't his real name. That ain't his real picture. What does he have to hide? If he's speaking the truth or speaking his truth or whatnot, then, you know, why don't he attach his name to what he's writing and stand behind what he's writing? So there was a whole thought process I had going into whether or not I was going to be public with my identity when I first got into broadcast media back in 2007. So, but yeah, Sean King is showing black self-respect. Sean King is a black person. I don't care how light-skinned he is, and we need to get away from that nonsense. All right, Malcolm X's mother was half white. All right, she had white people. And Malcolm X got white people in his ancestry. Many other prominent black people do too. Huey Newton, founder of the Black Panther Party for self-defense, showing the utmost black self-respect. So you gonna tell me he ain't black cause he, you know, has less melanin than you have, cause he light skin and all this and that. Angela Davis and whatnot. Again, I don't think that there's a huge percentage of black people in the United States that are that have pure African ancestry. They either mix with white people, they or Europeans, different nationalities, different ethnic groups out of Europe, or they may be have indigenous ancestry, indigenous to this continent. If you look at some of the old pictures of Indians in this country, they black, man. They more melanated than I'm melanated. Again, you know, so what defines blackness? And then, you know, you're going to tell me then that you're going to bring shame to the game on Sean King because he got a white parent and he's so light skinned and whatnot. But you willing to give a pass to them black cops out there assisting the system of racism and white supremacy to put us into slavery? And if they don't shoot us and kill us, then they will cover up for their partners, their brothers in blue, like we seen in the Walter Scott case. And that black person ain't never been charged for filing a false police report, trying to help that white supremacist get away with murdering that man. You gonna call them black people? You gonna kick them out of the club or something because of their actions or whatnot? Huh? That black judge we talked about on New Abolitionist Radio last night, and who is the latest entry on proxyracism.com, who told a courtroom full of black people that if they don't give blood, and they don't got money to pay this fine or whatnot, you're going to prison. Just got one. We got enough handcuffs for all of y'all. I'm not lying. That's what he said. We got enough handcuffs for all of y'all. So y'all can either give blood or you can go to jail. And then come to find out, you know, from an article we read last night, it's illegal to be putting people in prison because they don't have the ability to pay. or I should say jail in that case, because they don't have the ability to pay a fine. That's illegal. Debtors' prisons are unconstitutional, not only in the U.S. state constitution, but in most of the state constitutions. But these people are criminals, and they commit crimes every day. And that black man, and who I suspect was a black district attorney who also was caught on audio recording threatening black people with the same thing. Oh, you know, are they black? If black is, you know, if black has to do with our actions or whatnot, well, I mean, come on. See, now we're getting into confusion, right? So what makes them black? Their skin color? Because they damn sure don't show no kind of allegiance whatsoever to black people. And they are engaged in activities as proxy racist tools of the white supremacist system in harming black people. But then I got some people want to question me for even creating proxyracism.com and putting proxy racist black tools of white supremacy on blast. You won't come after me or say I'm engaged in incorrect behavior by informing other people about the incorrect behavior of black people harming other black people? Come on now. Where is the logic in that? And then you want to blast on this dude, Sean King, because he got a white mother. When he out there putting his neck on the line, putting his life on the line. They do kill black people. They do frame in jail and in prison activists. That's why we got so many political prisoners to this day. So they are, anytime a black person speaks on matters of justice in public or they work on those sort of issues, they are putting themselves at risk of death. So if you're trying to disqualify him from the black family because he got a white parent, I'm not co-signing on to that. Not gonna do it, man, because that's incorrect behavior. That is not any kind of behavior that is based in justice. And I gotta give it to Neely Fuller. Not that I didn't already know that, but when I came across that clip, I was like, man, he just cut it right down to making a very just point. And his point was, is your skin color don't mean nothing if you don't practice justice. Your skin color don't mean a thing if you out here practicing injustice. You want to weigh the red, black, and green. You want to, you know, talk about how black you are and wear dashikis and you know, you even got a pick for your hair, for your afro, with the black power fist on it. But oh, when you go to your job as a prison guard, you know what? You ain't practicing justice. You just getting some butter biscuits oppressing other black people. So skin color, and I'm trying to find the clip. Yeah, here's the clip. But yeah, Malcolm X, as he grew in knowledge and gaining more information towards the end of his life, he no longer based justice on a skin color. All right. And that's what we're supposed to do as we grow, as we learn, as we get older, that we process information. We're always supposed to be trying to gather information so that we can get a better understanding of the problems of the world. And I haven't had a chance. I started on the article, but I didn't finish it. Well, actually, I did finish it. I just didn't publish it. But even Malcolm X, if he were alive today, I would believe he would say he was wrong to suggest that converting to Islam is the key to solving the problem of racism and white supremacy. If we could just get enough white people to become Muslims, they won't be practicing racism. Now, he was basing that off of his interactions with white Muslims when he was when he went to Saudi Arabia, when he went to parts of Africa, and he came in contact with white people who were Muslims and whatnot, and they treated him with dignity and respect. But the thing is, he was a high profile, internationally known figure. So of course they probably was going to treat him with respect and decency and whatnot. But hell, they might have been enslaving an African back at home, like many of them people in Saudi Arabia do. Might be beating a woman and starving a woman and raping a woman. But that's what it's about. It's about living and learning. But does that mean that we should, Malcolm X was wrong about everything else? No. Many of the lessons that he taught, many of the things that he preached, is still being practiced to this day. It is very practical and it has real world applications, like black self-defense and whatnot. But I see a lot of people also misrepresenting the work of Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and they want to make it about colorism. And when I heard Mr. Fuller say that clip, say what he said about skin color and justice, I was like, man, I gotta add this to the collection, because he is dead on point. And this is what Malcolm X was suggesting in one of his last speeches. But this says it a lot more. It makes it a lot more clear to understand that, Public Enemy said, every brother ain't a brother, cause a black hand squeezed on Malcolm X the man. This shooting of Huey Newton, the hand of a nigger pulled the trigger. So this stuff, notion that everybody black is playing for the same team, that's nonsense. And that's why I felt like it was very important to build upon the work of others and come up with the website, proxyracism.com. But this is Neely Fuller Jr. talking about colorism and racism.
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice, except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are or how tall you are or who your cousin was or anything like that, or what so-called nationality you have. Like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag, if you don't believe in not mistreating people, you've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Now, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. I have been checking the phone lines again. I can talk. I don't need callers or anything like that in order for me to do a program, because, you know, as you can tell, I got plenty to say. But that option is open. I do value the input of other people. So if you want to give us a call, give us a call at 704-951-5030 or the conference line, which is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1, and that will signal me. I have been checking. So, let me continue. Now, Sean King posted the email exchange on Twitter. Now, he did do something incorrect. And what he did incorrect was, is that he did not, blot out or redact the email of the CNN producer, because, you know, if people don't make their email or contact information public, we should not make their information public. Well, I take that back. It depends. Okay. On the situation and circumstance. But, I do believe in hacking. I do believe in gathering information on people and then making that information public. But what was incorrect about it was Twitter ain't his platform. He don't own Twitter. He don't run Twitter. And Twitter has rules about sharing, making people's personal contact information public through Twitter. And so he did apologize for that, but that is what they suspended his account for, and said that they wasn't going to open his account back up unless he deleted that tweet with that person's contact information. So he deleted the tweet and they restored his account. So I'm not going to be reactionary and say, oh, Twitter is, oh, you know, the white supremacists, even though they are. But in this instance, I don't see them practicing an injustice when their terms of service say, you know, we shouldn't make that other people's information, their private information, public. Now, if he'd have blacked out her information and whatnot, then, you know, he probably would have been okay. But if he would have sent it to Black Talk Radio Network or joined us and published it there, shit, he wouldn't have got suspended. He sure would not have. And I've had people complain to me about some of the programming on Black Talk Radio Network, and I'll be like, you know what? This is a safe space for black people to come on and do and say whatever it is that they want to do and say, within reason. But them talking about white people, white supremacists, and them using this certain language, no, I am not going to suspend them. I'm not going to interfere with their broadcast. I'm not going to do anything. Hell, I don't agree with everything that's said, but they got a right to say it. Okay. They got a right to say it. So, but in this case, you know, I can understand where Twitter's coming from, because they make that up front in their terms of service and whatnot. And he posted it to Twitter. So maybe he should start a personal blog and whatnot to where he can put that kind of stuff up out there. You know, build his own website and whatnot. It's not that hard. And then you can say whatever you want to say. All right. And any heat that come upon you, you be willing to take it. But at least they can't force you to do nothing. That's why black independent media is so important, man. It is so important. Because, you know, they want to control the message. They want to control or limit your ways of fighting back. So I'm not going to call for a boycott of Twitter or anything like that, because they suspended him over this. They've now restored his account. I use Facebook. I use Twitter. I use YouTube and whatnot. And because that's where a lot of people at. That's how you can reach a lot of people. So you just have to be codified behind these enemy lines when you're using other people's platforms. So, you know, I know other people who have tried to build a black Facebook or black Twitter. I'm actually a member of the site, but, you know, most black people ain't gonna support it. But that's for another conversation. So you have to go where the people are when you're talking about putting out information and propaganda. You have to utilize it because that, hey, it's there. It ain't costing me no money and it's actually helping me. No, I'm not calling for a boycott of Twitter. Now, if they didn't have good reason to suspend his account, then yeah, if he was calling for a boycott, I would stay off of Twitter until the boycott is over. But he's not calling for a boycott. He said that, this is his exact words. He said, if sharing that made her feel unsafe, then I'm not proud of that, he said. If that's why the account was locked, the foul is mine. But if it was something other than that, then yeah, that's weird. So he's acknowledging a mistake. He's acknowledging, he's being reasonable and logical and saying, well, yeah, maybe she is afraid of people getting in contact with her because she, you know, is working for a white supremacist propaganda channel who has put out a lot of anti-black messages about black people. So some black people might get that email and tie it to an IP address and track that IP address down to a location and harm her. So I can understand her feeling unsafe about that. So I'm not proud of that. And so I'm going to go ahead and delete it and then continue on doing what I want to do. So, but shout out to Sean King showing the utmost black self-respect by telling them proxy tools of racism. No, I ain't coming on your damn program. I ain't coming on your platform. I wish more people would show the utmost in black self-respect and stop going on the white supremacist platforms and stuff because you want to be on get 15 minutes of fame or you just want to be recognized by a bunch of people for your work. If you're doing this work to be seen by people so that you can get pats on the back or whatnot, then your motivations for doing it is wrong. You should do the work because the work needs to be done, not because of any kind of personal benefits you may get from it. Dude, should people be paid for the work that they do? Yes, they should, because the work, you know, it costs money to do all this stuff. People gotta live, they gotta eat too. But as long as they ain't, you know, harming other black people, then I'm, you know, yeah. So I don't mean to ramble, people. I'm still a little tired. But I do want to talk about the main story that I wrote in the unpublished program description for today, which will be published later tonight. I want to talk about reverse racial showcasing. Talk about Quentin Tarantino refusing to back down on comments that police are committing murders in the USA and that their resistance to police reforms are rooted in white supremacy. Also, Jamie Foxx made comments Sunday supporting Quentin Tarantino, telling him, keep telling the truth and don't worry about none of the haters out there. Because, you know, the police unions, because they're a bunch of thugs and they're not really there to serve the people and protect their rights. Well, they, you know, are getting pissed off because a white person, a showcase white person at that, a high profile white person is calling them murderers. So they said, well, he got a movie coming out. Let's boycott this movie. And we're calling on all police in the United States and their families to boycott this man. Cause guess what? We don't believe in his First Amendment speech rights and why we swore an oath to the Constitution and we're supposed to serve the public. We can't have this man out here speaking any kind of truth on our activities because more people might wake up and then we won't be able to brutalize and murder and enslave as many people as we've been doing. So Jamie Foxx spoke up and told Quentin Tarantino, man, don't worry about them haters. You keep speaking truth. So, yeah, I want to talk about that a little more in depth when we come back on the other side, but I am going to kick some message music for you. That'll allow me to drink some water and whatnot. And then when we come back, we'll jump right into that story. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where police terrorism and brutality and slave catching is rampant.
Do you think that the right wing is using the black militants to wage war against the black people in America?
Well, as I see it, the full-scale war against us has been going on for some 400 years.
I mean, completely, but, wipe us out, the black people out. I mean, that they can open the concentration camps, they can have justification of the backing off the black ghetto, wiring it off, put troops around it. Do you think the right wing agitating the Black Panther mania, the black militant group in that direction?
I don't really think that whether they're agitating or not, I won't say that they're not, but what they're putting themselves in for is quite a different thing, you see. In other words, as far as black people being slaughtered, we're slaughtered every day, and historically 50 million black people were killed on the Middle Passage alone, according to Melvin J. Herskovich, and this was an act of genocide, which is not talked about, and that the only thing people talk about is the plight of the Jews, where 6 million were killed, and when I state 50 million black people were killed, just bring them to this country, no one understands this. But what I'm saying is that our real danger is not the Burchites or the Minutemen or some other fanatics. That our danger is really the people who wear the uniform of the establishment, dressed in the clothes of the military or the police department. They're strong enough to wipe us out, they're strong enough to inflict great harm upon the community. And this thing about the fanatics going around agitating, I don't think it will have a great consequence to the black community. The killing of little Bobby Hutton, our treasurer, was a matter of attempting to wipe out the leadership of the Panther, along with getting rid of Eldridge Cleaver, because of his book Soul on Ice, that reveals many things about the corruption of the penal system. Not only the Black Panther Party, black people in general are in danger. As you would note, that in the community where the police ambushed the Panthers, that the police fired upon the community in general. They fired in people's homes where there might have been women and children. Matter of fact, I understand that a child was almost killed, and that it was a continuation of the traditional tactics, not only of the Oakland Police Department, but the police throughout the country. And an immediate end will have to be put to this, and I think that what's happening now, that the Black Panther Party is merely speeding up time. As we know that whenever a man becomes frantic and strikes wildly, that he's becoming very weak. He's striking now everyone in the world, and we know that he won't be able to engage the whole colored world into a war, and also fight a civil war here with the revolutionary people of America.
Welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Several things about that clip before I jump into it. Again, referring back to my interview with Dr. Francis Cress-Welsing, unfortunately, I wasn't able to do any follow-up questions and whatnot. I don't want to rehash, but if you heard that, then you know how that went. But he just brought up a very important point at the beginning. concentration camps and making comparisons to Nazi Germany and talking about all the Jewish people have suffered, and nothing against them Jewish people that were the victims of Nazism and all of this and that. But do you know where the Germans and the Nazis came to study on how to mistreat people, how to practice eugenics and how to brutalize people and whatnot? They came, not that they didn't already know how to do that, but they came to America to study. They came to America to study their sterilization programs of black people and whatnot, and how they were throwing all them black people in the quote unquote prisons, which is another concentration camp. And I mean, even Dennis Rodman recognized that truth when he was on the white supremacist platform ABC, and George Stephanopoulos wanna try to throw shame on him for visiting Korea and talking about Korea got some labor camps. And Dennis Rodman told him without a blink of an eye, without hesitation, that America got labor camps. So, and what? Look, genocide has been practiced on this continent long before Hitler was ever born, long before the Nazi party rose to any kind of power. Genocide was being practiced against African descended people and other non-white people in this country, and it's been going on for I don't know how long. And if we are waiting around for them to start herding us up in the FEMA camps and executing us and putting us in the gas chambers and all of that, well, it's too late. But who's to say that stuff ain't going on already? Hell, they don't even give you an accurate count of how many people that the police is killing out there. For all we know, it is probably 100 times the number that we do know, which stands just above 1,100 people killed by police. And not all black, but, you know, disproportionately they're being targeted. But if they're not even sharing those kind of statistics with us, hell, how can you then say, because you don't see something? Look, let me put it this way. The absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence, meaning that just because you don't see something happening don't mean it ain't happening. It just ain't been uncovered. And these white supremacists have had hundreds of years, centuries, to refine their practice of genocide. And they have refined it so much so that they even got non-white people participating in it, just like some of them Jews was participating in rounding up Jewish people in Germany and putting them into concentration camps, getting them to go along with it, thinking that they was going to be spared the final solution, and their family was going to be able to escape it. And they didn't realize their grave mistake until they was put in that chamber and the gas was turned on. But my point is that we, some of us, don't have all the information. And it's one thing not to have all the information, but it's quite another thing to reject any new information. But Huey Newton said, genocide been going on by these people for over 400 years. There are hundreds of millions of black people, African descended people, who have been murdered throughout the centuries by these people. So, you know, ain't no speeding up time on that. That's already occurring. It will happen. It is happening. But like reason I love those brothers and sisters from that time period was that they were trying to speed up the time of fighting back against it. Instead of being passive, instead of allowing these people to just do any and everything they want to, getting involved in the war that's being waged against you, because they're going to kill you whether you are participant in the war or not. You don't see yourself as a participant, but you are a target. So hell, what you gonna do? Just wait until your time is up and they got you surrounded or whatnot? But like Huey Newton said, and again, you know, anything that I put out, anything that I have come up with, I'm standing on the shoulders of work other people then done, and based off the insights that they have given. And maybe I've just refined it a little bit more to understand it a little bit better or make it easier to digest. But he was talking about pricey racism. He was talking about the inability of white supremacists to practice white supremacy globally if he is engaged in fighting all the non-white people around the world. Now, unfortunately, we haven't reached that point. Why? Because of pricey racism. Because we, some of us, love them butter biscuits so much, we're thinking like those Jews in the ghetto, the elders in that community thought that they was going to escape the chambers by selling out other people and getting them to go along with this and that and to be nonviolent and to be passive and just, you know, we're going to try to appeal to the morality of people who have no morals, who aren't capable of it. Yeah, so that way, that's what proxy racism is about, is helping people to identify and acknowledge the fact that that's the only way that white supremacists are able to continue the system is because we buy into it. We support it with our dollars. We support it with, you know, through various means. Some of us directly working with the white supremacists, some of us, we may not be prison enslavers, we may not be a cop, we may not be a prison guard or a warden or whatever, we may not be the CEO of America, but guess what? We're buying goods and services produced by slave labor. All right, our investment portfolio is invested in private prisons and other corporations using private prison labor and whatnot, and we don't even care. We don't even care to see. We don't even care to do a background check on these companies that we invested in. And then, even if we do, we find out, well, damn, they invested in prison slavery, but that dividend is like, man, that's the highest on stock market, and they making hand over fist. They're making money. Well, ain't nobody gonna know what's in my investment portfolio. See, that's proxy racism, man. Let's jump on this story about Quentin Tarantino. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it, but I'm going to start off by letting you listen to the white supremacists. That's the only thing they're good for, is gathering intelligence on them. They're talking about this. Okay. Quentin Tarantino blames police brutality on white supremacy in this country. This is coming from Fox News, but they clipped some video from some of the other news outlets like Democracy Now and whatnot, and they produced this 9-minute report. So here we go. Let's go ahead and cue that up.
Breaking tonight, Quentin Tarantino is not backing down from his controversial comments about police as the divisive Hollywood director now doubles down on an issue that has made him a target of more than 250,000 police officers across this country. Welcome to the Kelly File, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly. Facing a nationwide police boycott of his films, the latest of which is due out this Christmas, Tarantino chose to give his first TV interview just moments ago to MSNBC host Chris Hayes. Yesterday, Tarantino offered his first comments on the controversy, telling the LA Times that he has been slandered and refusing to apologize for remarks so incendiary that not even his Hollywood bosses are backing him up. Harvey Weinstein, the producer behind his latest film, is reportedly furious with Tarantino. Here are the comments Tarantino made at an anti-police brutality rally that made folks so angry.
I am a human being with a conscience, and when I see murder, I cannot stand by, and I have to call the murdered, and I have to call the murderers.
Well, just moments ago, Tarantino gave his very first sit-down interview since the controversy started. And when given the chance to apologize, Tarantino instead appeared to double down.
We were at a rally that was dealing with unarmed people, mostly black and brown, who have been shot and killed or beaten or strangled by the police. And I was obviously referring to the people in those type of situations. I was referring to Eric Gardner. I was referring to Sam DuBose. I was referring to Antonio Guzman Lopez. I was referring to Tamir Rice. That's what I was referring to. In those cases in particular that we're talking about, I actually do believe that they were murderers. I was under the impression I was an American and that I had First Amendment rights, and there was no problem with me going to an anti-police brutality protest and speaking my mind. And just because I was at an anti-police brutality protest doesn't mean I'm anti-police. Because I had made statements in some interviews, you know, along the way that it suggested that I'm on their side when it comes to this issue of, you know, ultimately, what I feel is a problem of white supremacy in this country. And they realized that I was, you know, they gathered that I was on their side, and they approached me about it, and they explained the situation to me, and I was happy to show up. The timing was very unfortunate, and in his death, that officer's death is a tragedy. I acknowledge that 100%, and my heart goes out to him and goes out to his loved ones. However, the point of the rally was to bring these families. We had over 40 families, not 40 people, but 40 different families that this has happened to come out and tell their stories and say their loved one's name. And that's what's not being told, talked yeah. about. And so what? Because that happened, we're going to say, oh, no, no, don't tell your story. I know we flew you out here. We're going to fly you back. We'll do it at another time. It's yeah. just not convenient. I'm not a cop hater, but Patrick Lynch, that's the way they attack me, is calling me a cop hater. That's the way that Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, who's on Fox all the time, says that I'm putting police in danger by standing up for the rights of unarmed citizens who have been killed by the police. But at the same time, they say that about anybody who acknowledges that there's a problem in law enforcement in this country right now is considered by law enforcement part of the problem, whether that be me, whether that be Bill de Blasio, whether that be President Barack Obama, who in the case of both Patrick Lynch and David Clark have accused all three of us. And it's much easier to feign outrage and start arguments with celebrities than it is to deal with the fact that they've the citizenry has lost trust in them.
So I don't think he's going to be apologizing. Joining me now to discuss it, former NY City Police Commissioner Bernie Carrick and Bill Stanton, a former NYPD officer and founding partner of Q Verity. Good to see you both.
All right, I'm going to stop it there because I haven't had a chance to listen to their portion of it. But I know both of them is police terrorists. And then one of the things that Fox News did not tell you, because I read the article that they published on it and whatnot, they didn't tell you that Bernard Carrick is a convicted felon who went to jail for fraud and theft. And so then, but you going to bring him on, a corrupt cop, to talk, to blast somebody else who's calling out corrupt cops? I mean, the irony in that, you know, in the fraud that is Fox News. See, they ain't tell people that. That Bernard Carrick, in addition to being a former police terrorist, is also a convicted felon, which he got busted because he was trying to get promoted to be the next Homeland Security chief and whatnot, and they did a thorough background check on him, and they discovered that he was engaged in fraudulent activities. He was stealing from people. He was stealing from the taxpayers, and he went to prison. Now, my abolitionist brother, Christopher Irvin, out of Baltimore, had told me he had went to a conference addressing mass incarceration, aka modern day slavery, and Bernard Carrick was on the panel and saying Bernard Carrick is like acting like he's against mass incarceration and all this and that and whatnot. But I don't think he's being sincere. I think he's a plant. I think that he's using his status as a felon to infiltrate a movement so that he can gather intelligence and feed it to other people about our strategies and or their strategies or whatnot. But they gonna get a corrupt cop, a convicted, not that I'm calling him corrupt, but you called him corrupt, meaning the United States of America or the state of New York, because you convicted him of a crime. But Fox News ain't got a problem bringing on a criminal, all right, a convicted criminal on to produce propaganda to take down Quentin Tarantino. And then that other guy they got, he looked like now I'm not going to engage in stereotypes, but he looks like a criminal. And he's frequently on there. He brags about the thousands of people that he has arrested in New York City and taking them down and just, I mean, proud of his brutality and whatnot, and saying that, you know, the typical propaganda that they say to justify brutalizing black people, like James Blake. Now, we all saw him on video, this cop run up to him and throw him on the ground. That other former cop that's on there with Bernard Carrick, he gonna say, well, he could have had a knife. He didn't say he did have a knife or he did brandish a weapon and that's why they had to be so aggressive. No, he gonna say something that he knew wasn't true, that he didn't have a knife, but he justified the brutality. Anyway, Quentin Tarantino took risk in taking the position that he did. People involved in the police brutality, I would probably say that was Professor, man, the names is escaping me right now, the Princeton professor who participates in a lot of these police brutalities. His name will come to me later. Anyway, I think behind the scenes he recruited, or maybe it was Jamie Foxx. Who knows what's going on behind the scene to get prominent white people to speak on the issue of police terrorism and brutality, to speak out against the murders that are happening behind these enemy lines being committed by police. That was a case of reverse showcasing. See, there's some people who think that white people or white supremacists are the smartest on the planet and whatnot. I disagree with them on that. I disagree with them on that. They ain't any smarter than us just cause we ain't ended the system of global racism and white supremacy. Don't mean that they are smarter than us. What it does mean is that they have convinced a lot of non-white people to participate in their own oppression. That's what, you know, they are manipulative. They are very crafty and they're very underhanded. And that's why I have said that to beat a white supremacist, you got to think like a white supremacist. If you're fighting in a war against an immoral people, then sometimes you got to do immoral things. That's just the nature of it all. We don't want to do those things, but we're talking about life or death. So somebody convinced Quentin Tarantino to come out and speak out against these terrorists. And they even put pressure on him to try to make him apologize. But he didn't apologize. He went on ahead and stuck to what he said. He said what he said. And then his own father, I do have that clip, but I don't have time to play it. But his own father gonna say that I was very disappointed in my son for out here talking about all police are murderers. But see, that's what he did not say. He didn't say all police are murderers. He said that those police who killed Tamir Rice, who killed Eric Garner, who killed Samuel DeBose, who killed Tamir Rice and others, he called them murderers. Okay? But again, we're dealing with a very immoral people. They don't care nothing about the truth. The truth ain't in them. They are liars. They're like their father, the devil, Satan, and they don't care. And so his own father gonna go on, get showcased on media, mass media, talking junk about Quentin Tarantino. And then even one of his own executive producers, if I was Quentin Tarantino, I would stop, I would end my business relationship with Harvey Weinstein, because if all Harvey Weinstein is worried about is putting money in his pocket, and he gonna try to badmouth me and the timing of me making those statements, because he worried about, oh, the movie coming out and we may not sell as many tickets because these police got money, and now they're talking about boycotting and you should have just waited or whatever. Come on, man. Yeah, we see where Harvey Weinstein's heart is at. We see that he has no conscience. Tarantino said, my conscience won't allow me to continue to be quiet while these people get murdered, mostly black and brown people. Whoever convinced him to take that position, not only take that position to come out publicly and putting his career and his status as a white male in jeopardy and put his white privilege on. And see, that is using your white privilege in a beneficial way against white supremacy. And we have to become just as crafty as these our enemies are. If they can get black people to do it, if they can get Don Lemon to be showcased on CNN and engaging in anti-black propaganda and putting out white supremacy propaganda, then hell, I happen to believe that we can do the same thing, that we can get white people, because remember, Neely Fuller's teachings is that white people are not necessarily racist. That doesn't mean that they're a white supremacy. Do white people benefit from the system? Yes, they do. But they can choose to work against that system. They just like you didn't have no say in the skin that you was born in, they don't have no say in the skin that they was born in. And again, white people ain't the only ones practicing white supremacy. But Neely Fuller said, though, a white person is not a white supremacist, but you do have to be white to be a white supremacist. Now, so based on that logic, then that's why I had to come up with the term proxy racist, because you can't be a white supremacist, but you're practicing white supremacy. So we'll just call you a proxy racist. All right. But again, this is coming up with strategies. This is coming up with tactics. These people aren't the smartest on the planet. These people are the most vicious. They the most brutal. They have no conscience. So there is nothing that they will not do to practice slavery, oppression, murder, and all that. So to a certain extent, we got to do the same things. And some of those things I can't talk about on air publicly. But let me, just end by saying, let me echo the words of Jamie Foxx when he was being showcased at that Hollywood Film Award on Sunday, and telling Quentin Tarantino, don't worry about the haters. You keep speaking truth. You keep speaking truth. I might even break my code and go to the movies and pay them people some money to go see this film, just to give him a reward for speaking truth. See, it's the carrot and the stick, people. The same way they give black people butter biscuits to do certain things. How come we can't reward white people for doing something against white supremacy? It's not that difficult to figure out. It's not that difficult. It's just that, do we have the will to do what needs to be done? Anyway, we come to the end of Black Talk Radio News. I swear I was only going to be on an hour, but, got to do this. This is a job. And so even though I do got a whole lot of other stuff and I'm behind on a whole lot of other stuff, I do approach this program as it is my job. It is. This is work for me. This ain't no hobby. I don't get enjoyment from going on here blasting white supremacists and whatnot. It's very stressful. So, yeah. Tando Radio Show is coming up. Hope that y'all will stay tuned for that as they talk about how to rein in police terrorism and also about black self-respect in terms of black businesses and black voting blocks and just coming together as a million black conscious people to do black conscious things. So y'all stay tuned for that. Tando Radio Show is coming up here in just a bit if I can get this software opened up so that we can roll into that program. All right. Now, as I wrap it up, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. People are being killed every day. They're being beaten. They're being maimed. They're being enslaved. And there is no 100% foolproof method that you can employ to that will protect you from becoming a victim, but you can make it hard for the slave catchers. You can make it hard for the white supremacists to practice white supremacy if you don't fund their operations. All right. So develop that codification, develop battlefield awareness, and then hopefully one day we might win this war, and then we can implement a system based on justice. This is Scotty Reed signing out. Peace and blessings to all.
I will not go down that way. I choose to fight back. I choose to run.